Radio Superfly im Gespräch.
Frederick lies still.
Vom East End Mod Kid zum Architekten einer ganzen Bewegung. Eddie Piller lebt und atmet Musik seit den Tagen, als seine Mutter den Fanclub der Band Small Faces geleitet hat. Als DJ, Produzent, Radiomacher, Clubbesitzer und Gründer von Acid Jazz Records hat er den Soundtrack für Generationen von Soul Boys, Mods und Dancefloors geliefert. Ob Jamiroquai, The Brand New Heavies oder A Man Called Adam, Eddie Piller war immer dort, wo Stil auf Subkultur trifft. Mit seinem Gespür für Rare Grooves, Jazzfunk und britische Jugendkultur hat er den Acid Jazz Spirit weit über London hinausgetragen. Von verrauchten Kellerclubs bis hin zu internationalen Festivals und Radiostationen. Vor kurzem war er in Wien und ich habe ihn zum Interview getroffen. A living legend that might sound old, but in this case I really have to say it. Hello, Eddie Piller.
Well, hello. I don't think anyone's called me a living legend before.
Well, there has to be a first one. Eddie, you grew up in Essex and were exposed early on the mod culture. What drew you into that world so deeply? And did being a mod influence your musical taste at the end?
I think I became a mod when I was 15, and I think I hadn't heard much music up to that point, so I think it was all new, all of it was new, but particularly I liked the Jam and the Buzzcocks, and then from there, you know, it opened doors, and I just loved the mod culture and the mod ethic.
Well, it reminds me on my teenage years, I needed to find myself, and I discovered the mod culture through friends of my sister, and I got into that, into the style, the music, and also the vibe.
I think the mod scene is very important. It's a way of young people to discover who they are without interference from anyone else. You meet your peers, the mods, and they're all the same, and you kind of grow up different from normal people. It's strange to explain to other people who weren't ever part of it. I suppose rockabillies were the same, but mod gave me a chance to explore this weird, strange world. It allowed me to grow up within the confines of youth culture that was fantastic.
When you started thinking about doing a record label on your own, was it important to go into the future with it to define a new sound? Or was it also kind of looking in the past, making the best out of what there was already?
Acid Jazz wasn't my first record label. I'd already had three record labels up to Acid Jazz. So each one was a step in the right direction, a way of understanding music. The first one was a rhythm and blues label, and the second one was a mod revival label, and then the third one, I signed the Jazz Renegades and the James Taylor Quartet. So the third one, I was finding out what I really liked, and then the fourth one was Acid Jazz. And you know, we had Galliano, the Brand New Heavies, the Young Disciples, A Man Called Adam, Jamiroquai, Corduroy, Mother Earth. I mean, we had thousands of bands. I was very lucky to have been in that position where all these talented people were around me, you know, and I had hit records. It was incredibly difficult to have a hit record at the time. And suddenly, my hobby has become a very serious business. I had 40 people. I'd gone from having me to having 40 people that worked for me. And it was mad. I was 23 years old. So, you know.
Did you have a support back in the days from someone?
Joris Peterson was my partner for the first 8 months of Acid Jazz. And when he left, we split the label in two. I had A Man Called Adam and the Brand New Heavies, and he had the Young Disciples and Galliano. Mm. And so suddenly there was this will to succeed with I'm an independent, he was working for a major. Mm. So Talking Loud, Us the Jazz, it was like Blur and Oasis. You know, it was, kids, you'd go somewhere on a Wednesday to Wales and there'd be 1,000 people there waiting and they'd make you proud of what you did. And I don't know, I was only 23, I didn't know what was going on. I couldn't help it.
The beginning of AC Jazz Records, for me here in Vienna, and I just got the records in the stores, and for me it looked like that everything went very quick, but was it that easy back in the days? Because you mentioned there were the bands, they were talented. So did it work quite fast?
When we started it, it wasn't successful. There was only 100 people in England into this sound. And, Galliano was Giles's roadie. So he carried the record boxes for Giles and he used to get on the club and do a rap. So it took... It took quite a while for acid jazz to become established, but when it did, it became the music of students. So at every university and every college, the student bar would play acid jazz, and we could DJ at universities forever. You know, it was really strange how it caught on, and it wasn't easy, but once it had happened, it was a self-fulfilling scene. You know, and it only lasted 3 years, 4 years, but those 3 or 4 years are really important, as you say. You know, it changed your life, you know, and it hopefully it changed a lot of people's lives.
But I don't feel sorry. I want to make it plain, the dude's now dead, but he died in vain. When his time ran out, nothing would change.
I remember buying the first acid jazz record, which was Galliano with Frederick Lies Still. And I also remember I was immediately a fan of this vibe, the speech, the reminiscence to Curtis Mayfield. What made you decide to put this out as the first acid jazz record?
We didn't decide, but it just kind of happened. You know, Rob, Giles used to play the record. Rob used to get in the DJ booth with the microphone and do the rap, Frederick Lies Still. And it's over Freddie's Dead by Curtis Mayfield. So it's taking the story and making it more real. And we pretended in the press release that this was a New York jazz rap single, and a person called James Hamilton, who's dead now, but he was the most famous singles reviewer in the country, he reviewed it as if it was an American record. He fell for the joke that we did, and suddenly the record was everywhere. So we had to take it much more seriously after that. It wasn't going to be serious, you know, it was just called Acid Jazz. It was a bit of a joke. One record, I'd been releasing records for a long time, and I hadn't experienced, you know, we did 500 records, they sold out in a day. So then we did 15,000, and they sold out in 3 months. I'd never sold 15,000 records ever. So suddenly I realised, and we didn't have a distributor. This was from a warehouse. I realised that we were going to change things.
It's impossible nowadays.
Well, nowadays you don't have records anymore. You have, it's like a heritage industry records. I still release records. I firmly believe in records. But, you know, I'm at the end of my career now, so it's a shame.
Here in Vienna, you played for a Northern Soul party, and we see that Northern Soul became quite successful or trendy in the last years. A lot of major acts refer to it. Also, there are a lot of communities out there everywhere. You see it on social media. There is the Bristol Northern Soul Club, for example, but there is also the Deptford Northern Soul Club. How do you see the Northern Soul scene now?
The problem is their understanding of what the past was. These children, 20 years old, they don't understand what Northern Soul was. And it's some of the things I've read in interviews are really strange, you know. They think that people dance to Northern Soul like that because they couldn't move their arms because they had a repetitive strain injury from doing manual labor. It's like, no, it's weird. So I like it. I don't, funnily enough, I don't really like the Bristol Northern Soul thing, but I like the Deptford Northern Soul Club. It's two different kind of scenes. Bristol, they have dancing lessons and they take kids and they teach them to dance Northern Soul. Deptford, just, they're like I was. They're drunk, they turn up late, they fucking put on records, and they're good. I don't like it when it's too organised, and I feel that, you know, it won't hurt the scene, but, you know, there'll be, I don't know how long the people will be into it for, but I've been into it my whole life, you know, and I love it.
Too much organisation kills it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And look, acid jazz got so big that people, you know, didn't like it anymore. You know, there was major labels were saying, this is an acid jazz band, this is an acid jazz, and they weren't. They were just pop bands, or they cat the relaunch of the whole Verve catalogue as acid jazz heroes and things like that. That was really crap for us. So too much exposure kills anything.
Thank you very much, Mr. Eddie Piller.
Thank you.
Radio Superfly im Gespräch.